You're listening to The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema.
GGTM Sears, it's the Uncool Cat with the first of my Willy lists, Toronto International Film Festival reports. Sounds like I don't have a penis, but I'm pretty sure I do. Okay, so my first film was just on Friday, and it was a new Sion Sono film, Cold Fish. Most of you probably know Sion Sono. I know Love Exposure got a lot of talk with genre fans, and he's done Suicide Circle or Suicide Club. That's right. Which I'm sure many of you have seen, and a lot of people know it from the opening clip. But it's he's a filmmaker that I find, and I've seen Strange Circus as well, which sort of starts one way and ends another. And I haven't watched yet, Hazard, or the semi-sequel to Suicide Circle, Suicide Club, Noriko's Dinner Table, which I heard's very good. He's a filmmaker that it seems like he, with the exception, and even, I wouldn't even say with the exception, definitely Hair Extensions is almost like the J-horror film he did, but even that, it touches upon a lot of themes, and I find with Sion Sono's work, and as you'll soon find out, Cold Fish also being added to that, he touches upon a lot of things, which it seems some people like, me included in there, and some people sort of prefer a more focused film. I like that, you know, there's parts of his films I think I understand, there's parts that still confuse me. He touches on religion here, family there, and with Love Exposure, his 3.5-hour film, he really touches on so many things. That's sort of, I still consider that his masterpiece. Hopefully that's not spoiling Cold Fish. I did like that quite a bit, but yeah, he definitely has a way of filmmaking where he touches upon a lot of different things. And as I said, Cold Fish being no exception, which gets me to the plot synopsis here off IMDb, which does not exist. Good. The movie is about a man who, a sort of cuckolded man who, he owns a fish, an aquarium. And it's him, his wife, and his daughter, and it's a very unhappy family who meet a successful aquarium owner, and how sort of their lives interconnect, and yeah, definitely goes a little downhill from there. So I really tried to stay away from a lot of the stuff about this film. I just knew Sion Sono, that was good enough for me. And this was, I know Will's film for the festival was I Saw the Devil, which he was looking most forward to. This was mine. I really was looking forward to this. If this was the only film I could have got, I would have been more than happy. So I really didn't know anything about it, except, yeah, as I said, it was Sion Sono, but I also knew it was a serial killer film. I didn't know who the serial killer was and stuff, so that kind of worked in my favor, especially at the first bit of the movies. Because this man, this cuckolded husband, who I guess I can say isn't the serial killer, you're not supposed to suspect him at any point. It was just me not knowing the plot. He is very unhappy at home, and the film opens with a very frenetically edited and paced scene of his wife out shopping, buying some very instant noodles, instant rice, instant food. It shows a very quick cuts of her putting it in the oven, that would be a luxury, putting it in the microwave, and sort of serving it with no care and no love. And I know it's a running thing with my wife and me. This is going to show how cheesy I am, but I'll say, like, oh, how do you like the sandwich? Could you taste the love in it? And, you know, I get a big laugh. Never have. But you can see there's no love in the preparation of the meal. Then they sit down, and the movie finally calms down when they sit down and eat, and there's no love in there. At the table, there's no really any interconnection. They're all separate entities at this table, so much so that the daughter gets a call and leaves in the middle of dinner. I don't even know if she says bye. But it's one of these, and then he goes to the couch and he tries to get even intimate with his wife as she's watching TV, and she's not interested, and you can see he lives a very, very sad life. And also, he's a man who it seems like he doesn't want to face things. He'd rather accept things the way they are, which I'm sure is Sono's sort of contemplation on Japanese people in general. I know there is this idea of the Japanese sort of just following the rules and stuff, and definitely that's played up on here. So just going to my notes now. Yeah, and as I said, he gets a call at home that his daughter's been picked up for shoplifting, and she was caught by a fellow customer who turns out to be this successful aquarium owner who invites the man over and introduces him to his wife and shows his beautiful aquarium, and it's really interesting because you can see that this man's impressing the daughter, impressing the wife, and the husband just sort of sits there like a schlub. And it's this successful man has no problem touching this man's daughter's leg and sort of being very flirtatious, but the whole idea of they've been dishonored by their daughter stealing, it's almost like he allows this to happen. Like, there's no way he can't be noticing it, but he allows it to happen in front of him. And so a lot of the unhappiness, and there's a amazing part where it shows him, the husband, who I should also mention is every performance in this is just fantastic, especially the husband's. He plays, one of the things about playing, he is sort of a cowardly character, and I've always thought, like, in films, you can almost forgive anyone but a coward, because I think we see, when we look at a coward, we look at a part of ourselves we don't want to admit's there. When you can vilify a rapist, but, you know, a rapist, let's say, in the next scene, he helps the hero. He, you know, buckles down and helps the hero. You can sort of like, well, he sort of manned up there, a coward you just want to see die. And many people do. And I think that is because we all sort of like to think of ourselves, if this happened, I'd, you know, just start kicking ass. I'd grab the gun from his hand. Whereas, you know, there's that little part of us that knows, you know, if a gun was pulled on us, we probably wouldn't act as heroically as we would like to think we would. And I think the coward really brings that out. And this guy plays a very meek, mild, cowardly man, but he's not unlikable. So I really credit that to the actor. He did a great job there. And as I was saying, with the touching of his daughter's leg and stuff, a lot of the unhappiness in his home is his own fault. Even though he has these sort of Walter Mitty dreams of, you know, a better life and stuff like that, which is wonderful. It really adds something to the film. And he's doing it to himself. The killers, and I should say killers plural, it turns out the successful aquarium owner and his wife are, at first it seems like thieves, you know, who kill people in their aquarium and then hide it and take their money. You slowly realize these people are insane. That they're not just, you know, without morals. They are, like, absolutely batshit crazy. And the sort of slow build-up to that, I really, really liked. Now, once again, Sono hits on Christianity, which I've always thought was kind of weird. Will pointed out, even in Suicide Circle, it has the the religious cult. And of course, with Love Exposure, for anyone who's seen it, or it's very, very themed around religion, how religion even corrupts the main character, because the only way for his father, who's a priest, to pay attention to him is for the boy to go out and sin, and that's the only way his dad will show him anything. The main killer, the businessman, I wish I could remember their names. It's unfortunately on the IMDb page. It's just the names of the actors, and I don't know which one plays who. But the lead killer, he refers to when he was a boy, he was locked in a shed. His dad sort of went crazy and put him in a shed. And there's a lot of religious I'm not going to try and say that word. A lot of religious candles, statues, and stuff around it. And there's sort of the ritual he goes through when he disposes a body. They light the candles, and then they perform this gruesome, some of the most gruesome stuff I've seen, disposing of the body. And I love the idea. It's almost like a confession, because they even say they make the people invisible. So they go to this religious sanctuary, and much like a confession, which obviously Sono keeps visiting upon, they wash away their sins, in a sense. You know, they go in, murderers, and they come out clean through this act of just vile disposals of bodies. It's repulsive. And they're trying to bring... I'm getting way ahead of myself. So they essentially blackmail the father by... The father's daughter agrees to work at the successful man's aquarium. The successful man seduces his wife. So they're really blackmailing this guy to help them. Because it's never really explained, I think they just... They see him as a romantic, which he is. Romanticism is like the last vestige for a coward, almost, in a sense where, you know, he's a very deep, sensitive man. But yeah, he really, really is a coward. So they bring him into this as well. And they don't really force him to do too much except just be there. But it's like they're exposing him to it. And it is almost like trying to convert someone. Because this guy, he's the place where he's brought most peace, the husband, is the planetarium. And he goes there to find peace. And it's weird because in the planetarium, they talk about the history of the Earth and that the Earth will end at some point. And this is something that happens a lot in the movie. They keep revisiting this idea that the Earth is going to end, and that the romantic sees it as the Earth is a smooth, beautiful place, and the killer sees it as a hunk of rock. And it's this sort of difference of opinion, but it is weird that he finds his most peaceful place, that he keeps sort of revisiting in his mind, a place where you find out about the Earth's inevitable destruction. And I think that's probably one of the things people are most cowardly about, is like our inevitable death. There's no way we can escape death. And it's as much as this guy does to avoid death, to avoid any sort of confrontation, it's weird that he takes solace in the planetarium. And it's great. There's a scene at the beginning when he talks about the planetarium. Then when he tries to revisit, I think a lot of this movie is about trying to regain what's lost, like a happiness you may have once had that you've lost somehow and you can never get that back. And that's one of the great things about the dinner scene, is it's revisited later. And he tries to make it right, and you just can't do that. The whole idea of recapturing something that really wasn't real in the first place, because it's played out in your mind, is like, oh, this wonderful thing. And even Sono has a scene played out where it almost seems like it's from a different movie entirely, of like how he thinks of his family and how they could be. And it's funny, but it's also incredibly sad that the husband would like to see this. I went to see this with my wife, and I gotta say, it got really, really, really violent. And my wife's, she's seen Audition with me. She's seen Female Convict Scorpion, the second one, with me. She sat down and watched a lot of violent movies, but still, I always, whenever things start getting really, and I think this might be the most violent movie we watch together, I should mention, she was fine. She can take violence. She doesn't care. It's a movie. But, it makes me very uncomfortable sitting next to my wife as horrific acts on screen are going on. And the final acts of the film are almost, like, especially the two killers that I think might represent religion, and that's what I love about Sono. I think they might, but there's also stuff about, you know, family. There's also stuff about happiness. And I think the two characters might represent religion. And at the end, it's almost like they go into a religious fervor. Like, in the end, there's no sad, it just batshit crazy. And I almost wonder if it is like the people who handle snakes and stuff like that, like just how bloody insane it is. I think I've touched upon, he'll touch upon Christianity. He also, conformity is a big, big thing in this movie about how if we don't do anything, maybe things will get better. Okay, this horrible thing's happening, but maybe if we don't do anything, it'll go away. And the confident killer does not believe in this. Well, you know, the nice man does believe in it. I don't know if he believes in it. That's wrong for me to say. That's how he tries to live his life. It seems a lot of, you know, a lot of movies, they sort of have their thesis where at the beginning you kind of say, like, okay, he's stating this thesis, Sono. Then in the middle, okay, here's it playing out. And at the end, it's now here's a conclusion. Drugs are bad. Here's someone having a bad time with drugs. And now they die. So drugs will kill you. Sono, even with his J-horror film, does not follow that rule at all. He has so many different things going on in his film. Back from Suicide Circle, I think a lot of people were like, what the hell's this movie about? But it's about many things. And I think that's where Sono really stands out as a director, and one of my favorite directors, is his movies aren't about one thing. It's about many things, and this one's in a serial killer film. So I really admire that about his films. I mentioned that I really liked how he played a schlub, but still kept the audience sympathy, and kind of ranted about cowards. but yeah, even the killer says that, you know, everyone's going to die, and that's how he justifies things. Like, you know, whoever's listening to this, you're going to die. I'm going to die. It's inevitable, and it really, really sucks. And the planetarium scenes sort of touch upon that. The killer touches upon that. Like, death is just this inevitable thing. There is humor throughout the movie, and it is pitch black. Of course, during the movie, and this happens in almost any extremely violent movie, that sort of, as I said, it goes into an almost religious fervor at the end. And at the end, our main character, I don't want to say too much, our main character has a big change. And yeah, people in the audience, some people laughed at it, but it was one of those moments of like, just, this is so crazy. I think people are laughing at it, as opposed to like, haha, this is funny. Like, it's that uncomfortable laughter you may hear in a brutally violent movie or a brutally depressing movie. But still, there was humor to be found. I found it a little hard to laugh at things with my wife sitting next to me. But yeah, there's definitely some dark, dark humor in there. It's quite over the top. Guilt also plays a big part in this movie. Even the part where a woman who cheats on her husband, I think I've already mentioned that it happens, but, in case I won't, but she needs to be hit while doing it. And, you know, like, okay, she's going to go do what she wants, but she has to be punished while doing it. And I think it is one of these things where, you know, guilt is this thing, doing the right thing, or doing, not even the right thing, doing the thing that's going to cause the least problems. And it's funny, I saw a movie that's very thematically similar to this one later that I'll try and remember to mention. but it's like meddling and stuff like that. It is very much like Sion Sono's Blue Velvet. There's a whole introduction of this guy. Granted, it's not like Kyle MacLachlan met Frank Booth, they became friends, and Frank Booth turned out to be crazy. But it is that whole thing of sort of the main character. He's so out of anything beyond his control. There's, of course, many people in the audience who are going to say, well, I would have just phoned the cops, or I would have just done that. But, you know, that it's got to be terrifying to see someone killed in front of you and brought, like, it's got to be horrifying. So he's so far beyond anything in his control. It's really great. And the fact that the people sort of get crazier around him, it really plays like a sort of Blue Velvet thing. And as I mentioned before, how he tries to recreate happiness near the end. It's kind of brilliantly done. It's very, very hard to watch. I think there's a, much like Falling Down or something, where I think a lot of people saw Michael Douglas's, yeah, he kicks ass, whereas I don't think anyone involved in that movie meant for you to admire him. Like, he's a man who loses it, and even though he says things we've all want to say and all want to do, I shouldn't say we all want to say we all want to do, he does, there's things that a frustrated person might do, and he makes everyone a scapegoat. I think the same goes for this one, where he, some people might see him, it as him taking his life back in his own hands, like, oh, now he's being forceful, but I don't think Sono meant that for a second. I think it's the ending, I'm not going to talk about it much beyond that, but it seemed like it could be easily confused, and I think that's where some people might think, like, oh yeah, and then think, like, it was a failure somehow, because he's not very heroic in the end, without giving away too much. So, I've been going on for 20 minutes, I will go on to the make or break. I loved it right from the get-go, but I really liked when it became a Sion Sono film was I found when the father, he looks at the seal, he's laying down beside his wife, and he dreams of a happier life, and it sort of cut, we're well into the movie, this is before the credits, and it cuts to him looking at the ceiling, then it cuts to his dreams of sitting in the planetarium with his family, them, you know, having a good time, and just this life that you can't dream into existence, you have to make it happen, and I really love that. It's funny, because he's such a conformist and stuff, and of course I think a lot of people would relate to him, myself included. I'm not a huge rule breaker, and it's funny, when we were leaving, we were sort of let out one way, but I don't know anyone who's ever been in the AMC. But my wife said, oh, let's go this other way, which no one was there. And I, oh no, honey, we're being led this way. I seem to do that voice a lot. We're being led this way, so we'll go that way. And we nearly got crushed because I followed the rules. So it was kind of telling, why I related to the guy when it's like, oh, we'll go the way we were pointed rather than this empty way. Cause, there were doors and escalators going down and people weren't getting out the doors fast enough. Not really well set up if you, so if you're ever in the AMC and they lead you to the small escalators, take the large ones, break those rules. My MVT, Sion Sono. I find when I love a movie, it's hard not to make my, MVT a director, because maybe it's just we're raised in a day and age, or even just being film fans, you immediately go to the director for, any sort of compliment. If it's Cold Fish, it's Sion Sono's Cold Fish. The acting, up and down the board, fantastic. But Sion Sono, he wrote, he directed this. It really is. It's not as good. I might even go 10 out of 10 with Love Exposure. I really, really love that film. I think that's, it's going to be hard to top that one. But he damn well tries with this one. And it's a very, very satisfying film. So I'm going to go with Sion Sono. I don't know if anyone else directed this. I'm sure it would be a different movie, given it is based on a true story. I guess now that I'm at the end of the podcast, I should mention that. And I gotta say, I was a little disappointed to find out Sion Sono was doing a true story on a serial killer. It was like, well, I kind of don't expect that after Love Exposure, after Strange Circus, even after Hair Extensions and Suicide Circle. It seems a lot of people can sort of do that. You can do it well, but I kind of expect more personal things from him, but I do think he made this personal. I think, once again, there's like 50 statements scattered throughout, and I think, as I mentioned on the I Saw the Devil review, I love films with religious themes. I love dense films that me and my wife talked about it for an hour afterwards, and I was thinking of things like, oh my god, yeah, that's right, oh my god, yeah, that's right. I love things that might click in later. I really love dense films, and Sono seldom does not deliver. I've loved every one of his films, so he always delivers. My score for this one, 9 out of 10. Really, really, really good stuff. I think Sion Sono's filmography is well worth seeking out if you haven't seen any Sono's work, but Cold Fish might not be the one to start on, but yeah, it's well worth seeing if you like this kind of thing. If you don't like this kind of thing, you should be able to tell by the podcast. Very violent. I'm not going to say scattershot. I'm going to say many, many different ideas going throughout it. So, yeah, a 9 out of 10. And I shall be back soon with my review of Legend of the Fist. So, see you then. Adios.
Thanks for listening. You can find the gentleman at ggtmc.com. You can call the gentleman at 206-666-5207. And you can email the gentleman at midnightcinema@gmail.com. We'll be right back.